Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to live the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. Still got a wonderful conversation my friend and co-editor Brian Mercer did with the inspirational spiritual writer Teal Swan, and fascinating conversation with her about what we would call deliberate creation and spirituality. Check it out. It's over at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA at pnwa.org. The folks are already signing up for our summer conference, which is just about 6 months away now. This summer in SeaTac, Washington. Go to pnwa.org to sign up for that. If you're speaking of classes, I will be teaching, I believe there are still spots available, a one-day Craft and Confidence Authors Masterclass through the Whidbey Island Writers Association. And that's going to be on Whidbey Island this Saturday, February 13th. That sounds right. Yes, February 13th. And you can go to my homepage, williamknauer.com, and go to upcoming events, and I've got it listed there, the link, if you want. I'll also be posting it on Facebook if you follow me on Facebook and on Twitter. So there's still some spots left for that if you want to sign up for that. All day, I'm going to cover soup to nuts, the writing experience. And as always, I'll be focusing very much on the emotional journey of the author, which I consider to be so important for everyone, be they beginner or experienced. Well, today's guest, good Lord, Susan Mallory. Well, Susan, if you read romance, you probably know Susan. You might know her if you don't. She is the number one New York Times bestselling author of novels about the relationships that define women's lives, romance, friendship, and family. With compassion and humor, Susan keenly observes how people think and feel in stories that take readers on an emotional journey, which are the very best sorts of journeys to go on, by the way. Sometimes heartbreaking, often funny, and always uplifting, Susan's books have spent more than 200 weeks on the USA Today bestseller list, thanks to her ever-growing legions of fans. And I should say, Susan is a very prolific writer as well. While glancing through her website, I went to her book section, and I just started scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling until I got sick of scrolling, and I still kept seeing more books. So apparently she writes while she's sleeping and while she's taking a shower, and she'll probably be reading or writing while she's talking to me today. So let's get it started. Susan, welcome to Author to Author.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's good to have you. I want to start by saying we've got, the most recent book that folks can find is which will be out in a week, you said?
The end of the month.
The end of the month, and for those of you listening in archive, the month is February 2016. And the book is 29th. The Friends Week. It's beyond the 29th. On the 29th mm-hmm. itself. Oh, hey, your holy day is coming up this Sunday, isn't it? Come to think of it.
Okay, sure.
What? For the world of the romance writer, this is the big one, this Sunday. Or does it not really register in the world of the romance writer? Is every day Valentine's Day?
Well, if you're with the right person, every day is Valentine's Day.
No.
There's a lot of book promotion and every kind of promotion around Valentine's Day. It makes me crazy. Just it's so crowded and everything. So I'm very
right.
low-key
good for you.
About
good
it.
For
but
you.
Yes.
Although, magazine
people suddenly come find us and, oh my gosh, let's talk about romance.
Yeah. You know, I would say that really, I mean, when we think of Valentine's Day, that's about, well, I don't know, it's about something different for everybody. But it's definitely about a relationship. But it seems to me that romance, and you write under a broad umbrella that is of which romance is a part. I know that's not the full definition of what you write, but it seems to me that these books we call romance are much more about the woman's relationship to her ideas of love, more than it's more of a personal thing than a thing about an actual relationship with somebody else. Does that make sense? That what you're offering them is a deepening relationship to themselves in a way.
I think that women's fiction is much more what you're describing, actual romance, and that's sort of two parts of the quote-unquote female genre. The women's fiction is women friends, the woman's journey, a segment of a woman's life, the things that happen. A romance is truly falling in love, boy meets girl, and they fall in love. And what's interesting to me in romance novels is they're either female-centric or male-centric, and it depends on what the author likes. A lot of authors write incredibly male-centric romances. He's the star, he's on the cover, he's the first point of view, and you can usually tell by who is the first point of view. If you were to pick up 35 of my books and read the opening, you would find somewhere between 33 and 34 of them start in the woman's point of view.
I see.
Whereas a lot of other authors, they're going to start in the male point of view because, for me, the woman almost always comes first, unless I'm writing a trilogy about brothers, in which case I know who the brothers are. But my stories tend to start with women. So one of the reasons I write women's fiction is because it's a natural extension of what already interests me.
And what already interests you besides being a woman? How is it a natural extension of what already interests you? What is it that already interests you?
I enjoy relationships, what you were talking about before, the internal journey, the emotional journey. I find it fascinating that my husband can not talk to his best friend for 3 months, and they meet for lunch, and it's like they were never apart, whereas I can spend all day with my best friend and talk to her that night, and my husband's looking at me like, what could there possibly be left to say? And it's like, well, a million things. So that is a genuine difference, I think, between the majority of men and the majority of women. Obviously, there's, you know, differences. But I like how, you know, the cliche of the Old West wasn't settled until the women arrived. We create community wherever we go. We're the ones, are there paved roads? Are there schools? Is there a community, whereas the guys would, you know, go find the gold and the women want to go find the town? So I think it's biological. I think, you know, if we go back thousands of years, while a woman is pregnant and giving birth and has a small child, she's very vulnerable. And, yes, the hunter can sort of protect her, but he's got to go off and find what he has to do. So the community of women protect each other. And so I think it's hardwired. Women are hardwired to connect. And so I like that part of it. I like the community. Even in the romances, they fall in love, but I also love to create the whole world that goes around that, which is why I've written series that have gone on. My Fool's Gold, I'm writing book 20-something.
Wow.
And readers love the community of it.
Right. Because they grow to like just the characters, and they become sort of like friends to them almost.
Oh, exactly. All the time people are writing me saying, I want to move there. Well, I want to move there too. So sadly, it's a fictitious little town. But it's you know Mayor Marcia is going to do this, and Edie and Gladys are going to do this other thing and all of that. So in our hearts, it's a real place, and we want to go back again and again. And the romance allows us to take a journey to a place we love in a different way.
Yeah. And, you know, I love what you said, the real place in our hearts. And I always feel that it's such an interesting thing, writers, the job of the writer. And it really doesn't matter if you're writing fiction or nonfiction. I write nonfiction now, but sort of memoir-y, spiritual stuff. But the writer has to believe more in that while you're writing it, you have to, in a way, believe more in what you're writing than where you're sitting. It has to be as real, or if not more, to you in that moment of creation for it to be vivid enough.
Well, and I think for me, readers read fiction because of how it makes them feel. If they want to know something, they're going to look at nonfiction. If they want to feel something, for the most, the memoir excluded, but, you know, as opposed to the travel book or the how-to book.
Right.
All fiction speaks to who we are as people, and I believe what we read says a lot about who we are. Women like to read about connection. Very few men read in the romance genre. Men love, you know, rights made wrong. And so the thriller, the procedural, we want our bad guys punished. We want our good guys rewarded. We do not, as a rule, enjoy ambiguity. Now, life can have a sense of humor, and we accept that. But at the end of a mystery, if it's like, oh, gosh, I guess we're not going to catch him, oh, well, that book would, there would not be a second book from that author.
Right.
So I think that, but you're right. If I don't feel it, you're not going to feel it. So, because my job, all of our jobs as writers, somebody somewhere you will never meet, know nothing about, and can in no way control the circumstances of their lives needs to feel what you want them to feel at any given moment in your novel, and that's your job. And you have no control over anything except how you make that happen.
Yep. Oh, it's so true. I love what you say, and I couldn't agree more that, and I stress this to my students, that feeling is the human currency. That really is what we are exchanging, and it's what all we care about is how we feel. And in fact, when I teach memoir, I say, remember, even though you're going to describe events, the reader doesn't actually care what happens to you. What they care about is what it felt like when it was happening to you. That is really where the meaning lies in the events. What did it feel like? What did it feel like to see that guy? What did it feel like to see the mayor? What does it feel like to ride in the car? Emotionally, physically, but mostly emotionally.
Yes, and then the payoff.
Yes.
You can set up, you know, and you, the reader can see it coming, and it becomes the train wreck, all the better because not only are they feeling in the moment, they're anticipating a feeling. And that's the end. If you can do that in a genuine way, and so they don't feel played, but that's real to you and real to them, that is the ultimate payoff, I think, for the reader and the writer, and the hardest to do.
Yes. Aristotle said, it has to be surprising but inevitable.
Yeah.
The ending. I thought that was a good description of what a good ending should be.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So obviously, I'm going to take a wild swing and guess you like to read as a young person.
I did like to read as a young person until about middle school, junior high, where I lived. We live very far from other kids, and so in the summer, every Saturday morning, my mom slept in and my dad took me to the library. And the deal was I could check out as many books as I could carry.
Wow.
And that's,
I read. They had to put that limitation on you, huh?
Well, my dad was not willing to carry books for me, sadly.
Okay.
So that was the rule.
I
didn't load him up too, and then I would read all week, and next Saturday we would go.
Wow. Okay. So you were, and how long before you started reading in the world of what would be called romance and women's fiction? Did you do that as a young girl, or did that come later?
I was probably 13. I found a stash of Harlequin romances at a friend's house and started sneaking them out. And finally, her mother said, "I know you're doing this. It's okay. Just don't let your mother know."
Were these risque or just or were they pretty G-rated?
Oh, okay. So I actually remember the very first one I read. It was called Dark Star. It was a Harlequin romance. It was probably written in the 60s because she was English and he was from Mexico, and it's back when Mexico was foreign and romantic. And she was a secretary, and when she went home, she washed her collar and cuffs, which is still, they must have unbuttoned. And it's a marriage of convenience, and she goes with him to his hacienda, and partway through the story, I still remember this so clearly. She was brushing her hair, and he comes up behind her and puts his hands on his shoulders and says, "I would like you to bear me sons." And she puts the brush down, chapter ends. The next chapter, she's riding a horse and smiling. So, no, not risque.
Now, your 13-year-old mind, did you, you know, I have to tell you, I'm trying to think. Actually, when I was 13, I read a Sidney Sheldon novel. You remember Sidney Sheldon?
Oh, yes.
And it was called Stranger in the Mirror, and it was anything but chaste, I will tell you that. Oh, my God.
Well, at the same time, they passed around The Godfather in my social studies class with the pages marked. So,
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So, no, I had read that, but what was magical was the relationship, the doubt, the dark star is her sister who comes in and messes things up. And it was just so amazing. And so from there, I was reading old Gothic novels, which I loved, and historical novels. And then I got, because at first, you know, the librarian was not going to let me take stuff home. So she would call my mother, who did not appreciate being awakened, to ask if I could read, you know, The Thornbirds. So then, as I got older, then I got into the sexier novels and all of that. But it didn't matter. I mean, to this day, I read a lot of young adult. I think some of the best writing currently is being done in young adult. And a lot of them, some are, I'm like, why are you having sex? Don't ruin this with that. And some of them they are, and it's fine, and some they're not, and that's fine too.
Yeah. Well, so, but at some point you must have said, I want to try my hand at one of these things. Did you, could I tell you the average age, this is unofficial, but I talk to a lot of writers. I'm always interested when they get interested. And for a lot of them, age 9 is when they start recognizing the stirrings to write. When did it start?
Oh, that's really interesting. I did not. I was a reader. I never cursed.
Yeah,
I wrote
read.
Really bad poetry, as all teenage girls need to do.
Yeah,
I think it's part of the growth process. But no, I was actually in college. I was studying to be an accountant. I have a degree in accounting, and I know. And I saw there was a. I lived in LA at the time, and there was a. It was called the Learning Tree, where you could take aerobics or calligraphy or dog training, and one of the classes was how to write a romance novel. And I thought, well, I'm in college, I'm newly married, I really don't have time for this. And then I kept seeing it, and about the third time, the third brochure, you know, it was 8 weeks, so it's every 8 weeks. I thought, this woman is not going to teach this class forever. So I signed up for the class, and I started my first book. And in some ways, I had such an advantage because I was in school. I was taking however many classes a semester. And so once it was an 8-week class, and by week 6, I realized this is what I want to do with my life. And I didn't know what to do with that information. I was about 18 months from graduating. I was taking accounting theory, you know, and managerial accounting and all that stuff. And so I would write, but I would write in the summers, and I would write some during the semester. But the other thing that I had access to, I was in Los Angeles, was workshops. They're everywhere.
And so
I took tons. And because I was in school, my brain was used to learning. I could sit through a 3-day seminar. Today I would get through 20 minutes, and then I would see a squirrel and wander away. But back then I could actually, you know, I could do it. And I did, and I took so many classes. So that was basically it. I was getting close to graduation. I was taking the CPA review course, which is even more hideous than anyone can imagine. And I left one night at break, and it was the night we were studying accounting theory, because you don't just have to do it, you have to know why you're doing it, and went home and told my then-husband, I don't want to take that amazing job I was offered with benefits and vacation. I want to be a romance writer. And we fought for a long, long time, which is possibly one of the reasons we're not still together. And and so we agreed I would try to make this writing thing work, and I would have 2 years to do it. And then I had to call my recruiter and say, that lovely job with, you know, paid vacation and benefits.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, he was desperately old. He was probably 40. but to a 22-year-old, you know, this desperately old man, I knew it was going to go badly. And I called him up and told him, and there was just a very, very long pause, and he said, I still remember his name was John. He said, I write fantasy, but I've never had the courage to do anything with it. I will give you 2 years. And if you don't make it, I'll give you a job.
Wow.
So
wow.
That was it. I graduated in May. I sold my first book in August. And I'll tell you the year, but no one is allowed to do the math. It was 1990. And my first book came out in 1992. And 2 years later, I called back and said, yeah, I sold 7 books. One day I'll make as much as my accounting friends. Not yet, but one day. And I never went back.
Boy, you really just got on the horse and went. But you know, I'll tell you, all that reading – It isn't necessarily preparation, but it can be. It like teaches you, it goes into you like what a story is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to learn to translate it, but it does give you the foundation of what, especially a romance, the particular rhythm of those stories too.
Well, and I was, the reading definitely, because it's sort of like, you know, for a native speaker, you learn the language by hearing it, not studying it.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that. But I took classes. I took UCLA Extension classes. I took screenwriting at the Screenwriters Guild. They would do classes for non-members. I took seminars. I if it was available and I could scrape the money together, I went. And I just soaked it up like a sponge. And on being prolific, one of the things that's funny is when I first started writing, I didn't know anything. So I just started, and I had a certain amount of time, and my mother had, in high school, she had said to me, I think this computer thing's going to take off. You need to learn how to type. And thank God I listened. And so I had a block of time. I wrote 10 pages because I didn't have to edit, because that would require knowledge, and I didn't have that. So I thought, okay, 10 pages. So that's how I started. And so I just always wrote 10 pages because it made sense to me. It was 10 pages. And I took a workshop, and one of the, just a throwaway line before lunch, the guy said, oh, increase your output by 10%. And I was, I remember walking out with some friends to lunch thinking, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. So then I went home and I started writing 11 pages a day. And then when that got easy, and so that's why I'm prolific.
Interesting. Boy, it's so funny. You went from what is maybe the most pragmatic career in the world, at least in contemporary America, accountant, to what could be considered one of the least pragmatic, which is not, but it actually turned out to be, you took such a diligent, workmanlike approach to learning it that it turned out to be just as pragmatic to you.
Exactly.
Really?
I have a very left brain approach to how I outline. I'm a big outliner. I love a good outline.
Oh, you are.
I have a very strong sense of business. It is clear to me. Writers will complain about stuff. It's like, honey, do you know when you're late? There's like 14 other places this manuscript has to be. I don't like that I can see the business side, but I can. I mean, I'm as crazy as everyone else. Let me, you know. Let's not pretend that's not true. You can't do this and not have a bit of the crazy. But I have a very strong left brain, and I think it served me well.
Yeah. Well, let's see. We actually have a caller who would like to ask you a question. It looks like Jeffrey, is that you?
It is, Bill. Thank you so much for taking my call, and congratulations, Susan, for everything you've accomplished and will continue to accomplish, I'm sure. And one quick thing, it is tax time, so maybe we could talk. My question is writers, I know you're very prolific, and that's the most wonderful thing we can wish for, but for all of us, I know there's days when the pen feels like it figuratively weighs a ton as we try to glide it across the page. What are some of the things we can do to pull us back and just have that work just flow again seamlessly onto the page?
Well, do you have that challenge any, Susan?
Of course
this one, it's not coming today?
Yeah. I have the funny response, and I have the less funny response. The funny response is financial commitments are often inspiring. I have found that the mortgage company doesn't particularly care about how I feel. They only care if the check clears. So sometimes fear can be a good motivator. But the the more genuine response is there are, of course, there are bad days. But for me, the worst day writing is still better than the best day doing anything else. What I do is I tell myself, because I hear from a lot of readers, and I'm very complimentary, but every now and then there's the, my mother is dying of, or I have lost a child or something, and your book got me through. So on the really bad days, I sit down and say, this isn't about you. Somebody somewhere needs this chapter. So get your butt in the chair and get it done. You don't have the right to keep this from them. And that often works very well. I have a schedule. I stick to it. Some days I'm done at 11, and some days I'm done at the other 11.
Right.
I still do a page count because word count, the numbers are too big. It's hard.
Right.
68,797 is not a number I can grasp. But 15,
right,
which is my daily page count, 5 days a week, I can work in 15. So I work on a schedule. I have deadlines constantly. I've done this a very long time, and it's not always easy, but I'm not a, the muse is busy.
Right.
She's probably at Stephen King's house. She's not at mine. So it's up to me. And it beats Walmart. It really does. I don't have to get up at any particular time. I don't have to dress a certain way. I only have to be nice to the pets. I'm very, very blessed, and I appreciate the blessing. And so every day I put my butt in the chair because sometimes because there's nothing I'd rather do, sometimes because I have to, but my job's a blessing, and I try never to forget that.
That's such a good attitude, Susan. I'll tell you, I think gratitude is one of the most grounding perspectives we can return to.
Mm-hmm.
Gratitude, it keeps the good stuff coming. I really think so.
I think so, too. And also, it reminds us that we're not all that. You know, if you start to take things for granted, it's very easy to be, oh, well, but it's me. But if you remember to say thank you, it's sort of, I think being put in our place on that level, on that spiritual level, reminded of our place in the universe, not everything's about us, to say thank you, to feel grateful, goes a long way.
Yep. Absolutely. And I love what you said about, and I think it's interesting that to get yourself through, it doesn't even sound like blocks, but just those points where you don't know what, you're not sure how to proceed and you feel a little stuck, is that you took your attention off of yourself and you let it be about something you were in, kind of in service to. And I think that's great advice, whether you do it the way you did, by thinking about the people who you want to, who are going through a tough time, who might use the book to get them through that. But I think that it's when we start thinking about ourselves in this one way, in terms of what we're going to get from this and what we need, it actually works against the creative flow, which is outgoing and not incoming so much. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I totally agree. I think that it is about the outflow. It is also about, and I'm very fortunate. I've written a lot of books, so I can say trust the process. If it's your first
right.
book, you have no process to trust, so you need to go build your process. But once you've
right.
reached the point where you're comfortable with your work, you know, I have a friend, I have very wise friends, and one of my friends once said to me, I'm like, I hate this book. I hate every word. It's direct. Trees should attack me and kill me for their soon to be death. And she looked at me and she said, every book is somebody's favorite. Somebody out there, they're going to say to you, this is my favorite book. And I have a book I wrote while one of my parents was passing away, and I hate that book. I hate it from start to finish. Well, I didn't hate it at the beginning, but
right.
I still had to write. I was on deadline. And because of the emotional connection to the book, I hate it. Readers come up all the time, oh, my gosh, it's my favorite. And the first time somebody said that to me, I was like, why? But I've learned to be more gracious. And accept that. Every book will be somebody's favorite. I don't have to love it. And at the end of the day, when I go read a book or read my pages, because I never read my books, but when I, you know, do editing, I can't remember what day was easy and what day was hard.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. It all reads the same, doesn't it?
It does all read the same.
I know.
And truly, every book is somebody's favorite.
I know. Our blood is not on the page. It turns out it can't be seen. You know what I mean? Whatever we suffer doesn't actually show up for.
No, it really doesn't. Interesting to me. I don't think anyone could read one of my books and say, "Oh, this is the one." No,
yeah.
They can't. They can't know, and they shouldn't know. That's not. It's not my place to inflict my pain on them. It is my place to take them on an emotional journey.
Well, Susan, what a fabulous conversation. If people want to learn about your books, they can go to SusanMallory.com, or they can probably just find you on whatever. They can find you wherever books are sold, but the most recent book, the upcoming, will be The Friends We Keep, but there's a lot more out there if they want them. Susan, good luck on your next 15.
Oh,
what's that?
Come play with me on Facebook. I'm busy there. I love it.
Oh, good. Okay, yes. You're good. You're a good social media participant.
Well, that's a byproduct of just finding it fun. I get to play.
That's good. All right. So if you're into this stuff, find her on Facebook. Find her on the internets. Find her books. I think you'll like it. Susan, good luck. Have another good 15 pages tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that.
Thank you. This was
great. All right. Take it easy. All right. Thanks.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yes, it's good. It's good. Let it go out. Let it go out. Another one, another one, another one. Another one, another one, another one. Next week, and actually for the next 2 weeks, we're going to do something a little different. Next week, I'm going to be talking about a new story about writing. It's going to be just a little conversation. You're welcome to call in and join that conversation. But I'm going to be talking about a new story about writing. And the week after that, I'll be talking about fearless writing. So these are going to be just conversations about subjects, something a little different on author to author. But until then, go write 10% more than you normally do. Why not? It'll be 10% more of what you love.